Hi, I'm Lisa Goldberg, and welcome back to the Right Way to Weight Loss Summit. I'm here today with Tricia Nelson. I'm super excited about this interview because Tricia and I are so on the same page about everything that we talk about. So Tricia lost 50 pounds by identifying and healing the underlying causes of her emotional eating. And she has spent over 30 years researching the hidden causes of the addictive personality. Tricia is an emotional eating expert and TEDx speaker, and the author of the number one best-selling book, Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. Tricia is the host of the popular podcast, The Heal Your Hunger Show, and is a highly regarded speaker, which is why I'm excited to have her here with us today. And today we are going to talk about, you know, how to heal your hunger now. But before we get into this conversation, Tricia, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to see you, Lisa. We go back quite a ways.
We do. And I would love for you to tell the listeners to a little bit about yourself and what got you started in the work that you do.
Cool. Yeah, happy to do that. And it goes way back for sure. And I can remember I was an emotional eater. Of course, didn't think that. I thought I'd like food. So I did. I love to eat. I love to cook. I love to serve food to other people, go out to dinner. This is a big highlight for me. And that wouldn't have been a problem, except that I gained weight really easily. And by age 21, I was 50 pounds overweight. So that was super painful for me. I had like this roll on my tummy. I still have a roll on my tummy, but it's not as big now. But I got a roll. So I would scrunch it up in my hands and imagine cutting it off, like you cut fat off the side of a steak. And I thought about getting some disease where I'd automatically lose weight without having to diet, or maybe I'd go to boot camp where I'd be forced to exercise. Because I hated exercise. So crazy thoughts, right? Like some crazy stuff, which to me is really indicative of the fact that I felt so out of control with food. Like I just felt like I don't know how to deal with this and control it. Diets didn't work for me, Lisa. Like I tried so many diets and exercise plans and pills and potions and lotions. Like I just did so many things and I ended up in the same place or bigger. You know, so I could lose weight. I had like 5 different sizes of pants in my closet because I could lose weight, but then I'd gain it back again and then some. So it was so frustrating to me. And I hated my body. I hated being overweight. I wore black stretchy yoga pants as much as I could, you know, to smooth out the rolls. And, you know, the thing is, after trying so many different things, I even did deeper things. Like I went to an eating disorders therapist twice a week for a year. I did 12-step programs. So I did a lot of stuff. I was not a slouch. You know, I was like giving it everything I got. But at the end of the day, really the needle wasn't moving much. And so I felt a lot of despair. I felt like, wow, because I was young and I thought, I can't do this the rest of my life. You know, I can't do the yo-yo dieting thing for the rest of my life. I knew it was unhealthy to gain and lose like that. But also just so discouraging. It's like, cause I'm trying, it's not like I'm sitting at the movies eating bonbons. I'm literally trying my best. So I felt very despairing. And what changed for me is that I met somebody who just really talked to me in a different way and said, look, your problem's not food. You know, your problem isn't food. Your problem goes deeper than food, and it's really your deeper hunger. And so that really started to change things. You know, it was really the emotional eating piece. You know, why am I eating? Why am I compelled to eat? That's what changed everything for me. And once I started to go there and also learn how to take better care of myself, set boundaries on my time, you know, all these things that I'm sure you teach as well, it's like, I needed to change my life. You know, I needed to change my life. And when I started to do that, it changed what I weighed. It changed how I felt about my body. It changed my relationship with food.
Well, you know, first of all, I feel like there's so many people listening right now who are probably sitting there saying, that's me, right? Yeah. I tried everything. I would lose the weight. I'd gain it back. I felt the despair that you felt because, you know, as we know, so many people who try so hard and you kept on going, but I know for a fact, there's so many people out there that get discouraged and frustrated and actually tend to give up on themselves.
Yeah.
they start to think there's something wrong with me, right? I should be able to do this.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I used to call myself a loser. I'm like, you're such a loser. Like you know, Sally and Betty, they're losing weight and keeping it off. What's wrong with me?
Right. Yeah. And that only adds to the other emotional problems that you probably discovered that you were experiencing, because as we know, it's never about the food. The problem is never with food. The problem never is that people don't know what they should be doing.
Right.
So, you know, and we talk a lot of the work that we do is overcoming emotional eating. And this, you know, conversation is how to end, you know, emotional hunger now. But there's a lot of people who think, well, I'm addicted to food, or I'm addicted to food. I'm addicted to sugar. I'm addicted to, it's more of an addiction versus an emotional eating issue. And so for anybody listening, how would you tell them the best way to discern and maybe describe what a food addiction is, right? Because there's so many terms under the umbrella. If you're a binge eater, if you're an emotional eater, if you're a food addiction, step down for us a little bit.
So my experience, Lisa, is it's really a spectrum with emotional eating on the low end and food addiction on the high end. I mean, I think we're all hardwired to have an emotional connection with food. It just makes sense. You know, it should be an enjoyable experience. It's just that some people like me take it too far. And so my experience is what qualifies where you end up on the spectrum are two things primarily. The first one is the level of control that a person has to course correct. So let's say somebody goes on a cruise, they eat too much cheese and desserts and wine. They come home, they're like, oh, my pants are tight, you know, got to do something about this. And so they jog an extra 10 miles that week, they cut out sweets. And then within a couple of weeks, the 5 pounds is off. That's somebody with a lot of control. They can course correct. They don't feel good, they course correct. You know, and then they're back to their normal size. They don't have 5 sizes of pants in their closet, you know, and then also the number of consequences. So 5 extra pounds, not a huge consequence. But if you talk about a food addict on the high end of the spectrum, which is where I was, that's somebody who can't course correct so easily. Like to me, I'd gain 5 pounds and then it'd be like, oh, screw it. And you feel bad for eating, and then you eat some more. It's the craziest thing. It's like, I'm so mad at myself that I ate and I'm going to go eat some more because of it, you know? So I would just keep going. I would keep going up the scale. I'd be just in that dark place of, you know, going to hell in the handbasket. So that's somebody with very little control. And then talk about consequences. The longer you do that, or do the yo-yo thing, the more your body like says enough already, you know, and you get joint pain, you get diabetes or pre-diabetes, you have autoimmune issues, gut issues, whatever, cancer. I mean, there's no end to which, you know, our bodies will suffer when we're feeding them with crappy foods. And I didn't binge on salads, you know, like I binged on cookies and Doritos and ice cream and stuff it definitely took a toll on my body. So the longer somebody's doing the emotional eating, the more, you know, negative consequences they have. And the telltale signs of addiction are things like losing control. You know, when you start eating, when you can't control how much you eat, which was me, I mean, I'd open a bag, I'd finish it, but then with the salty, you got to have some sweets. So I'd go for the cookies, you know, so it's like turned into this binge. So, I mean, I didn't have control. Another telltale sign of addiction is that you need more each time. It's called tolerance. You need more each time to get the same effect, the same hit. So where I used to binge maybe on, you know, a small bag of gummy worms or something, all of a sudden I'm going to 7-Eleven and I'm getting ice cream, cookies and chips and, you know, doing the whole thing. So it got really bad for me, my binges. And so, you know, when somebody, another telltale sign of addiction is you eat in spite of the consequences, in spite of negative consequences. You know, your doctor tells you you're diabetic, you'd better stop eating sugar, right? Or cut down. And it's like, you're going on these crazy binges anyway. I mean, how painful is that? Right? So that's somebody who's addicted. You do it in spite of, first of all, knowing better, right? So we all know that we shouldn't be eating these things, but we do it anyway. And in spite of even some scary news or some scary, you know, warnings that of what we're doing to ourselves. So that's an addict. I mean, that's somebody, it's like, why would somebody do that? So my experience, that's what really qualifies where you're on the spectrum. I actually have a quiz on my website that a person can take to find out where they are on that spectrum. It's literally gives them a personalized score. So, you know, but to me, to sum it up, it's all emotional eating. Mm-hmm. My experience is if I'm addicted to food, yeah, sugar's like highly physically addictive. Sugar and processed carbs are addictive. They do set up a craving in our bodies. But if you haven't had sugar and processed foods in a while and you're like craving something, that's an emotional, you know, craving. And so my experience is most of our cravings are emotional, and in our destructive eating is emotionally driven.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things into what you just said, which was interesting. So yes, I think that part of the addiction is because sugar is so addictive, right? And kind of like the drug cocaine, you just want more and more and more, right?
Yeah.
So if you're feeling a little good, you need more to feel really, really good. And I feel like the food manufacturers have made even the salty stuff, right? With like the more fat or the more salt or whatever they put into it.
Yeah.
You know, studies show to make that food more addictive, to make you keep craving more and more and more, because addiction has a lot to do with our brains, right?
Yeah.
Physiological and psychological. So, and the fact that you need that, kind of like drugs, right? You know, the outcome is only going to be negative, right? There's nothing positive about doing that. And like you said, regardless of all the negative health effects and mental health effects, right? What it does to your psyche to keep doing that to yourself.
Yeah.
Do it anyway. Right. So yeah. It's really important for the listeners to recognize that sometimes they're kind of like set up to take the fall, so to speak, by the food manufacturers, because they're intentionally making your food, right?
Highly addictive for sure. Yeah. And it's hard to eat a little bit, you know, it's just hard to eat a little bit without going over control. But to me, it's the perfect storm between addictive foods and buried emotions and, you know, increasing stress and all the different emotional components that go into it. It's kind of the perfect storm for continuing to eat in an unhealthy way.
Yeah. Yeah. And also what you said, you know, all of our cravings, and I agree with you. I feel like very few cravings are physiological. Like your body needs, like once in a while, I do believe like if someone says, like, I feel like I want like a hamburger or something like that, maybe they are a little deficient in iron and their body knows something. But I agree where most cravings are emotional, right? Like yeah. I feel like chocolate is usually an emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. We generally don't have a chocolate deficiency.
Right. Exactly. So could you share, like, how do you help your clients discern what's an emotional craving versus like actual physical hunger? What's an emotional hunger versus physical hunger?
Yeah. Well, my experience is with people who struggle with food and weight, they're really used to kind of the starvation, deprivation, binging cycle, you know, and obviously when you're eating like in that kind of pattern of skipping meals, like I used to skip meals, and my experience is with emotional eaters is that we have this little sneaky part of our brain that's like, ooh, I'm going to like hack the system, or I'm going to lose weight if I skip lunch. You know, it never works because we always pay for it later. So, you know, what helped me a lot is getting a lot more stabilized plan of like eating. And I don't recommend, like, I'm not a nutritionist, so I don't tell people what to eat, but I do recommend something, a phrase that I coined called 3-meal magic. So, which is eating 3 meals with nothing in between. And my experience is, you know, emotional eaters aren't good at feeding themselves. Ironically, you know, we'll binge on crap. We'll snack all day, right? We'll skip meals and go really hungry or do our intermittent fasting, whatever, and starve ourselves. But feeding ourselves, we're not very good at. So, you know, like 3 just really good, nutritious, healthy protein, healthy fats, you know, slow metabolizing carbs. It's like vegetables, just, we don't feed ourselves. So my experience is just doing 3 meals with nothing in between is pretty revolutionary for us, you know, and that'll just kind of make you feel better right away. Because if you think about it, the foods we snack on, the snacky foods are nuts and chocolates and candies and chips and everything that really just makes us gain weight super easily and we don't feel nourished by. So if you just cut out the snacks and you just focus on making a healthy meal, that's a game changer right there, you know, because, and yeah, it takes some time to make good food. Yes, it does. You have to invest. There's no free lunches here. You have to think ahead, you know, buy some good foods, look online for a good recipe, or find a good health food store that makes, I buy prepackaged salads sometimes at my local health food store, which I'm grateful for when I'm, you know, running around and busy. But my experience is that if you're on a regular schedule of eating and you're not starving yourself and you're not snacking, what happens is you have space in between those meals to start identifying what emotions are. Because I didn't know. Like I was stuffing all the time. I was numbing my emotions. I couldn't tell you what my emotions are. Pissed off or fine. Like that was kind of it. So, you know, when you have space between your meals, there is some hunger, you know, it takes an adjustment, but a lot of times that hunger is emotional. So what helps me with this kind of way of eating, Lisa, is that if I've had a good breakfast at 7 a.m., you know, but there's a scary phone call I need to make. Scary to me means just an uncomfortable conversation. But if there's a phone call I have to make at 10, you know, I'll start feeling hungry. I'm like, oh, you know, I think I'm hungry. Or I'll tell myself I'm starving. And then I have a little conversation with myself. I'm like, really? Like, really? You had a good, healthy breakfast. Are you really starving? I'm like, no, I'm not starving. So then it's like, well, what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to. I do talk to myself. So it's like, I don't want to make that phone call. Like I'm nervous. Like I'm dreading having this uncomfortable conversation, addressing something that's uncomfortable. It's just getting used to life in between the meals, you know? And so, and what is life? It comes with feelings. Life comes with feelings. And to me, it's like, I had to learn how to feel those feelings and process those feelings in a healthy way, write about them, talk about them, pray about them, you know, just learn to be with my feelings. And so often emotional eaters just, we want nothing to do with it. And that decision was made at a very young age. I mean, I think at a young age, I'm like, that feeling thing is for the birds because I was in pain, you know, as a kid with very few resources except food to get me by. As a kid, you don't talk about the stuff that's happening. You don't, you know, there's nobody to turn to typically. And food is kind of your only thing available. Food and fantasy, you know, books, whatever, TV, game, you know, now it's gaming, but there's limited numbers of healthy ways to deal with uncomfortable feelings. And so that's what we have to learn as adults.
Yeah. I mean, you said so much there. I mean, and first and foremost is that most people learn this behavior at an early age, right? That's how, when their relationship with food is established.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's when you're young, you have no one to turn to, you're feeling bad about yourself. Food is always accessible, right? And then when you eat that unhealthy food and the sugar and stuff like that, you discover that you're no longer thinking about those bad feelings because you're so focused on the food you're putting in your mouth. So all of that other stuff seems to disappear, at least for the time being.
Yeah, momentarily.
You're done. And then it's like, immediately, why did I do that? And so, you know, you said something earlier and when you were just like, I talked to myself, but I think talking to yourself, having the conversation that you had is so crucial, right? Because the minute you feel uncomfortable about to make that phone call, like half the listeners out there, you think about, am I hungry? What can I eat? Right. Not even hungry. It's usually, what can I eat?
Yeah.
Yourself. Are you really hungry? Do you really need to eat? What is this about? So that self-talk is so integral, right?
You
have it in order to kind of get clear on what's really happening for me here, right? Like dinner was at 7:30 or 8, it's 10 o'clock. I need to make a phone call. Am I really needing to put food in my body or do I just need to get through this phone call?
Yeah, it's a whole, I mean, really in order to change our relationship with food, we have to have a relationship with ourselves, you know, and that's what so many of us have opted out of for so many years. You know, let me figure out what, you know, our parents think, like, want us to do, then our boss, then our spouse, then our kids. It's like, we're always pulling people outside of us. Like, who am I? Tell me who I am. You know, we're chameleons. And it's like time to build that relationship with ourselves and learn, who am I? What do I feel? What do I think about that? You know, and it's a real relationship with ourselves that we're building, but it totally impacts our relationship with food to start asking those questions and tuning in and listening to our gut, and beginning to come from there instead of in our heads and out here.
Yeah. Because the crazy happens in our heads, right? The crazy conversation. Yeah. And then I always say to my clients, if you were to say that out loud to a friend, you'd be like, that sounds like nuts.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We're not friends anymore.
But you also said something earlier when you were talking about how emotional eaters don't know how to feed ourselves, right? We don't know how to nourish ourselves. We don't know how to feed ourselves. And I think that has a lot to do with all those years of dieting, because somehow you've been trained, the less I eat, I'm supposed to lose more weight, the faster I'll lose weight. So the more you restrict and deprive yourself of the things that you love and nourishing foods, right? Like if I skip breakfast and skip lunch and just eat dinner or just have like a shake or something like that, I'll lose more weight or I'll lose weight faster. But it, as you said, it always backfires. And I think it's because people have just been taught to diet, and diet is about restriction. You know, and I know you believe, and I believe this too, that 98% of diets don't work.
Yeah.
Is there a bigger reason that you think of that why diets always, you know, fail people?
Yeah. On the topic of feeding ourselves or caring for ourselves, you know, food was how I dealt with life. Like, that's how I coped, excess food, you know, munching out all the time. And it's a habit, and it takes time to break that habit. It is so habitual for us to, like, I'm uncomfortable, go eat, or I, you know, I'm bored, go eat. So it takes time to stop, you know, do it, a pattern interrupt. But what's so silly about diets is that, and it is proven that diets fail. I mean, there was a study done from the British Medical Journal, and they studied 22,000 adults on one of 14 popular diets. And after a year, almost everybody who'd lost weight had regained it, you know, and it's just, it's, the studies are out there. Diets are not the best way to go. It's, I mean, that the statistics are abysmal. And my experience is it's because food, excess food, my ooey gooey and chewy food that I loved, that's how I got through. That's what, you know, towards the end of the week, that's what I was looking forward to. That's how I rewarded myself. That's how I did fill in those little, you know, uncomfortable places where I was alone or felt lonely. So it serves so many emotional purposes for us. So, but the idea is, like, take away all your coping tools and then, and lose weight and you'll be happy. But it doesn't work that way. Cause if you don't, if you take away your coping tools, all you have is all the stuff that you were needing the coping tools for. All the feelings that you were stuffing come to the surface. And if you don't have new tools to deal with those, you're going to go back to the tools that you know, which is always food. You know, it might be some other things, might be pot and, you know, alcohol as well. Shopping is always a good one. But the bottom line is it's always food. I mean, you got to eat. This is the hardest of all addictive habits to overcome, bar none. You have to eat. You have to take the tiger out of the cage, pet the kitty, and put it back in the cage without getting your ass torn off. So it's very difficult. You know, and that's why we need support. That's why it's hard to do it alone. But my experience is it really is, you know, such a coping tool that it, if you don't, I mean, to me, that's why the diets fail. It's like you just stripped away everything I was depending on to get by in a stressful world, you know, with nothing in its place. So my experience is we have to have new tools in its place. Like, if you're gonna eat differently, you have to live differently. You need new coping tools, and you do have to change how you live, you know, and that's something that people, that's not a very sexy message. You know, the diet is a much sexier message. Like, just eat this and you're going to be happy and your life's going to change. And you're going to, you know, be, you know, whisked off into the sunset with your knight in shining armor. It doesn't work that way. Like we have to, my experience is we create our cravings. And the thing is, we create them by how we live. And so if we want to eat differently, we have to live differently. And I'll give you an example of that. I'm going to talk about the anatomy of the emotional eater, which we were talking about earlier. So in my book, I talk about 24 personality traits, and I coined this as the anatomy of the emotional eater, kind of a play on words. And those traits have nothing to do with food. So a lot of people think emotional eaters are people, you know, eat ice cream when somebody breaks up with them. Well, no, it's a lot more than that. It's like a whole personality profile. Like there's a way that in my experience, in my research, there's a way that emotional eaters deal with life that is different than your average person. So these personality traits have nothing to do with food, except that they lead to eating. Okay. And this is why it's not, you know, the diet is too superficial, because if you just take away those foods and you don't change how you live, you're in trouble. So the number one trait of an emotional eater, you know, it from my many years of doing this work is people pleasing. Mm-hmm. Like I've never met an emotional eater that wasn't a people pleaser. And I was the worst offender. And my experience is this often comes from the fact that as children, you know, we didn't have a strong sense of ourselves. Okay. I did not. I mean, I had a good family, but my parents were people pleasers. I come by it honestly. Like it was always about what the neighbors think, always trying to make people happy, never like listen to your gut and follow your gut. I didn't get that message, you know? So it was always about looking outside myself for validation. Now for people that grew up with alcoholism and dysfunction, and we'd had dysfunction, but I just mean any kind of trauma at all in your childhood, and you're not getting a strong sense of yourself, which means you're scanning outside of yourself to get validated. Like who can make me feel like I'm good? Like I'm good and I'm worthy, because I don't have it. And what we do is we people please. We run circles around everybody at the job, like at the PTA, at church. You know, we do all the extra work. We stay up late to bake the brownies for the soccer team. You know, we're going out of our way. And we're basically doing this so we get validated. The problem is that nobody's ever as pleased as we plan on them being. So it's like, I was expecting a lot more praise than, oh, thanks, you know? And it's like, thanks, what are you talking about? And so it's the perfect storm. You know, you basically have run yourself ragged, right? You've exhausted your adrenals. You're totally wiped out, tired, burnout, burning the candle at both ends. And then you're kind of pissed off because nobody ever appreciates you the way you expected them to from all that effort. So then you're like, screw them. I'm going to have the, I deserve it. I call it the, I deserve it binge. Like I'll reward myself, you know? And so, and it just, but it is a setup. It's a constant setup for overeating, this people pleasing thing. And it's a hard one to break. I mean, it's like, you know, it doesn't come easily. It takes practice to break and to realize, hey, is it really paying off for me to be all things to all people? Like, is that really paying off for me? I'm sitting here struggling with an additional 50 pounds in my body. Maybe I should change it up. You know, maybe I got to look at how I live. And this is why it's so important for people to realize we have to live differently in order to eat differently. You know, I call it living our way into right thinking. You know, you can't just love yourself. You have to have self-loving acts. You know, you have to live into loving yourself by putting boundaries on your time, by saying, no, my plate's full. I can't take on that extra project. You know, that's something we really have to learn. Otherwise, to me, we're not going to lose weight and keep it off.
Yeah. I mean, and you said something about you have to have the right thinking, because as I listen to you, and you're right that, you know, in your head, when you're upset and nobody's giving you the praise that you want, and you say, screw them, I'm just going to go eat all this unhealthy food and reward myself. The only one who's really getting screwed is you.
Right. Yeah. Everybody's just fine. Right? You know,
so think about, like when we said earlier, the crazy happens in your head, you're thinking, well, I'm just going to retaliate or screw them because they didn't give me what I needed. Yeah. And then you go and emotionally eat, and they don't suffer the consequences of that. you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you said the right thinking, you have to think about, what am I thinking? Does it even make sense?
Oh, no, it doesn't make sense. it doesn't make sense at all. Yeah.
But I agree with you. People pleasing is really like a number one thing that, because it says that you don't have, you need more self-esteem, you need more self-worth, you need to value yourself more. Yeah. When you need to get your validation from someone, for so many other people. And, you know, that's why this is called the right way to weight loss, right? Because as you've just brought up, it's about so much more than the food people eat, because people know what they should be doing, right? I mean, if I just wrote a newsletter saying, if I had a dollar for every time a client said, I know what I should be doing, I'm just not doing it, right? So it's about so much more. It's about really doing the deeper work, as you know, you talked about figuring out, you know, the difference between emotional and physical hunger and what's pushing your buttons. And, you know, what do you need to uncover about yourself? And like you said, what did you call the three meals a day?
Three meal magic.
Right. You know, to take that time in between to really kind of get reconnected with your true physical hunger, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and your emotional hunger.
Right. Exactly. What's emotional and what's true physical. But I feel like if people could just wait long enough, right? Because it tends to always be putting something in their mouth, right?
Right. But that's because we're so afraid of feeling, you know, like I feel like we have an internal alarm system where when we feel that hunger, it's like, I got to eat. And there's a very subconscious belief that to be hungry is to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's like, oh, the alarms go off. And it's like, I got to eat. That's why intermittent fasting is tricky for emotional eaters, because if you go too hungry, you know, the binging happens because you've got that alarm, like, I'm going to die. And my experience, food did save my life at one time. Like as a kid, you know, when we have trauma, it saves our lives to have food there for us, you know, to soften the edges of whatever we're going through. And so that, I think it's really important for people to realize that, like, food served us in a way we can thank it for the service it did. It doesn't serve us anymore to binge and eat excess food. But there was a time when it felt like it was saving our lives. And that's why we have that internal alarm system when we feel hungry. And it's true, we have to wait, you know, if you wait it out and learn to make peace with that hunger. And that comes from that very beautiful self-care of preparing healthy meals, making sure we have food in the fridge, you know, thinking ahead if you're traveling, having something on hand so you're not just eating crappy plain food. You know, it's like that, all that self-care, that's how we reparent that little girl, right? That was afraid and felt like she was going to die, right? So without the food. And so there's a lot that goes into the healing journey, but it is such a valuable one, because when we do learn to feed ourselves properly, we do learn to listen to what our emotions are and stop invalidating our own emotions, like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way. Well, you feel how you feel. You know, it's like, what it's really is a journey of self-care and self-love, you know, wrapped up as trying to lose weight.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, so if there's, for anybody, you know, who's listening right now, who could so connect to this conversation, and they're just like, that is me, I eat my emotions, I distract my feelings, is there one or two tips, or whether it's a tip or a mantra or something that you could leave people with that they could kind of start doing, you know, more sooner than later to kind of start their healing journey?
Yeah. Something I didn't talk about earlier, which I'll leave you with, is called the PEP test. And this is a way for people to start checking in with what the, because the idea of that I'm feeling something when I want chocolate, a lot of people are like, no, I just want chocolate. But just to have start, you know, exercising this sort of self-evaluation process. The PEP test, PEP is an acronym, P-E-P. And the first P, and what the PEP test is, it's a way to check in with yourself when you are convinced you need to eat chocolate. So, or go to the refrigerator again and find out if anything has appeared magically. So, the first P stands for painkiller. Mm-hmm. My experience is we use food as a, like, we know what food does to us, but the pep is more like what it's doing for us. We use food as a painkiller to kill uncomfortable emotions, to numb ourselves out. Okay. And there's all kinds of pain in the world, you know, earthquakes, hurricanes, debt, you know, pandemic. I mean, there's divorce, travel, you know, whatever, relocation, loss of jobs. It's plenty of pain to go around. So we use food to kill the pain. That's why we're not binging on salads. We're more binging on, you know, heavy carby foods. The E stands for escape, because often as emotional eaters, we want to get out of our heads. Like we talked about, we want to escape the crazy and the fear, the awfulizing, the worst case scenarios that we're replaying in our heads. And oftentimes, you know, we just want to time out from that, and we do it with food. The last P in PEP stands for punishment, which seems counterintuitive because we eat as a form of reward so often. But my experience is later when we've overdone it and we feel terrible, that's more of a punishment. And that's really because we feel guilty so easily as emotional eaters. Like we really, you know, we feel guilty about everything and we're super hard on ourselves. Oh my goodness. I've never met anybody harder than themselves than an emotional eater. Like we're just beating the crap out of ourselves all the time. Why did I do that? Why didn't I do it this way? Why aren't I better? Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, food is it's got a built-in punishment when we go overboard, you know, and we don't fit in our genes, you know? So the PEP again is painkiller, escape, and punishment. I mean, somebody can just sort of check in with themselves and like do the PEP test. And is there something I'm uncomfortable about, or, you know, something that's bothering me that I just don't want to feel? Is my mind just driving me nuts? You know, am I trying to escape my mind, my thoughts or my mean thoughts? And also the guilt, you know, is there something I'm feeling bad about? Maybe I do need to make an amends, you know, apologize for something instead of just playing it over my head and beating myself up with food. So it's just a way for somebody to kind of start taking it deeper. Like just, you know, it's not about the food. What is about what's going on inside of me?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think, you know, just the PEP of what that is, if people really start connecting to that, it's kind of like, why would I continue, right, to do this, right? Because it doesn't feel good.
We deserve to feel good.
Yes, we deserve to feel good in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not, and that's another thing too. It's not about feeling good in the moment. It's feeling good about ourselves long-term.
Right, exactly. I love that. And Tricia, I know you talked about your book and I know you have a gift for the listeners today.
So yes.
About that?
Yeah, so I'd like to offer my a digital version of my book that people can download. So my book is called Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. And so you can access the book and get a ticket to my upcoming Quit Sugar Challenge. So I do a 5-day Quit Sugar Challenge, which is really fun. We do it together and people get off of sugar. I give them, you know, we do sweet sleuthing. So we're looking for sugar in our cupboards. In the late, we're learning to read labels. There's 80 different names for sugar. And it, as you said earlier, their manufacturers hide the sugar in our foods, even foods that we buy at Whole Foods or Trader Joe's. So we got to look for the sugar and clear it out. So we're not getting addicted, hooked into the sugar. So we have a lot of fun. We have swap recipes where you learn how to make sweet things without sugar and just really just get on a healthier path, but it's so much easier to do together. So we're having one coming up soon. So you get a free ticket to that as well.
Oh, excellent. That sounds like a great time. And because there is sugar hidden in everything, even places that you would least expect it. So that would be a great journey for people to take with you, that 5-day challenge.
Yes.
And if they want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
My website's a great place to go. It's healyourhunger.com, H-E-A-L. You can access my podcast, The Heal Your Hunger Show. My TEDx talk is on there and other fun things as well.
Great. Excellent. Tricia, thank you so much for being here with us today. and enlightening everybody and, you know, giving everybody an opportunity to recognize, right, that, you know, they can stop emotional eating. They just need, as you said earlier, the right tools.
Yes, absolutely. Right?
That's not food. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And everybody, thanks for tuning in. Until tomorrow.